Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about project management. And a big part of it is this. When I was working on my checklist, you know, you gave me some homework to do some research on whatever services I was going to do for my data center. So I was thinking of my checklist just for the service. But you're actually in IT, and you have done project management. So if you actually had to do this in a live work environment, how would you approach your checklist?
So this is something that I've been running into at work and with others. So one of the things that I've been going to is our ISACA meetings. And the last two times I've gone, we talked about incident response and the kinds of things you need to do for that. And that got me thinking about all of the things I've been trying to do in terms of security. How do you implement these things? What's important about that? Why do we have to have certain things? Why are we trying to keep certain things secure? How do you manage these IT projects that you're working on? So for us, it's going to be a little bit different, and we're going to try to use examples here to help us understand what's going on. And my checklist right now is not comprehensive. It doesn't include everything. These are just some things I thought, okay, these are important for me to remember, and these are things that I'd like you to know.
Let me ask you this. So when you're looking at something that, like you said, is not comprehensive, you can't put everything in there because you're not going to know everything that you have to put in there. What is the bare minimum that you actually have to have? Or do you have a bare minimum when you do your checklist? How do you approach something like that?
So this is kind of like our Cisco network lifecycle process.
Right.
It's somewhat similar to that. That doesn't go away. We still use that. But this is something that I think is more business oriented. And you think about some of the technical things you might have to have.
Okay.
And we've talked about some of these things. So the first thing is a business case or a business reason for having something. If you don't have a business reason for that, why are you doing that? So that's number one.
But who tells you the business reason? Do you come up with it? Or, you know, because you know the business part of it doesn't talk to IT real well. There's some sort of miscommunication in there. So if some CEO comes up to you and says, okay, I need this, and this is the reason why, is that the person that justifies that reason why you have to have it? Or do you as IT say, you know, we really don't need that? How do you?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Because we're going to use some examples for that.
Okay.
So then there's technical reasons, right? You have to have, or technical requirements. So in any IT project you're going to work on, server, workstation, network equipment, security, there's always going to be some technical requirements. You should understand at least some of those before you begin.
Right. Like when you have me do the research for software, I have to have the minimum requirements to be able to know if it can be installed in a specific, you know, piece of hardware and what have you. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. And part of the technical requirements are going to be understanding whether or not you have the necessary tools or the necessary resources to be able to implement this. You know, you want A, but A requires B and C. Do you have B and C? If you don't have B and C, maybe you need to go get B and C so you can do A.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things I want you to be aware of.
And that's why you have to have the business need.
So, yeah. So then there's the business requirement. Now, on the business side, they may say, we want this. And you as the IT person may have to say, well, okay, you want that. Well, if you want that, we need to go out and buy these things. Or we can't provide that. We don't have the capability of doing that. So the business requirements and technical requirements are kind of done together. There are some behind the scenes things that you can do that are technical that the business side doesn't need to know about. But if the business asks for something, you are going to have to figure out whether or not you can do that. And if you can, what do you need to do that? There may be some things you have to go purchase to accomplish that.
Okay.
A lot of times the business side will ask for things that is unrealistic. So you have to bring those expectations down a bit, and then you can say, okay, I know what you want. Here's what we can provide. Why don't we meet in the middle someplace?
Do you ever, like, let's say somebody tells you, okay, this is what I want. Do you first go and say, okay, do we have what we need to provide that with what we have? And if not, Is there a possibility that we can purchase something to make it work with what we have? Or do we have to purchase new stuff all the way around to be able to? At what point does that become part of the IT budget, for example? Like if it's feasible or not feasible to do? Does it matter?
Those are things that you have to take into consideration. So, and that's why we're talking about this now, is because we need to make sure this is part of our process. This is something that we're thinking about. So we have the implementation plan. You may have the idea of what it is you want to do, but now how are you going to implement that process or that new technology, the new server, the new workstation, a new version of software that you're going to deploy to workstations? And the important thing there is to do what you're already doing with your project. So this is stuff we can apply to your existing project with your Raspberry Pi stack and your services. You're testing them now.
Right.
You're making sure it works. So that can be part of any implementation plan. Let's test it. Let's make sure it works before we deploy across the entire network. If it's new software, maybe you want to test it on some people before you deploy it everywhere. Because if there's some issue with those people, they're the ones who are going to have the issue, not everybody. So it's things like that that we want to think about. Management plan. How are you going to manage this new technology? Whether it's a new service, a new server, new software that you're going to install on somebody's workstation. What's your process for managing that? Can you manage that? It may be something that is outside your area of expertise. It may be something that the business requested. You know, management said, we want this. And then you find out, well, okay, they really have to have this. This is something they can't live without. We can't implement this. We can't manage it. We this is just outside of our area of expertise. We don't have the skills required. We're going to go pay somebody else to come in and help us with this. Or we're going to go with a third-party vendor and they're going to host it for us. Maybe it's some sort of service.
Or you don't have time to actually manage it and you need to have somebody manage it for you.
Correct.
You know.
And the last one here is your security plan. How does that fit into your overall security for the organization? Is it going to make it weaker? Do you need to change things? Is there something about this particular new technology that you can do to improve its security? So these are things you need to be thinking about. And far too often, all of these things on the list are things that people think about either after the fact or not at all. And they just figure out some way to just, you know, shove something in there without having an actual plan. And you don't want to do that because that's going to be a recipe for disaster, because then you're going to have situations where you're always going to be called because something's not working, something broke, people are having issues using that particular new technology that you implemented, and things are just not the way they could be. Again, it goes back to my idea of being able to have time for my coffee. If I have time for coffee, that means that things are working the way they're supposed to be. If somebody's calling me all the time, something is probably broken, and I need to find a way to prevent that from breaking as much as it may be, you know, because they're calling me all the time.
Okay.
So these are the six things that I thought of. And it's, again, not comprehensive, but it gives us an idea of what we need to be thinking about when we talk about new technology or setting up a new network.
I agree.
So let's use an example here, right? Because I think these kind of help. So the first one here is purchasing a new switch. So for example, let's say you work for a small organization. Maybe you have a couple of switches. They're maybe 24 ports each, and you have some extra ports left over, and you say, okay, I want a new one.
Why do I want a new one?
Exactly. Why do you want that new one? What's the business case for that? Maybe you don't have one. So there's no way for you to justify that. Now, one thing that you have to think about is that management doesn't really understand IT. So you could be in a situation where you find a way to get management to buy that for you, even though there's no business reason for having that. You just want it. So they give you the money to go buy that. Later on in the year, you find out that, hey, I've got workstations that are old. I want to replace them. There's a business reason for replacing them. They're old. They don't work as well. People are complaining. My system is slow. I want a new one. Well, guess what? You spent all the money. Now you have no money to buy new workstations. So there are some things that you need to think about, even though you're in IT, that kind of help the organization function properly, because management's not going to understand what you're working on, and management may not understand why you're asking for something. And it's possible that you could end up spending money on things you don't need. And then when you do need something, there's no money left over.
So when you do your business case, the business reason why you need something, would it be, you know, would it be right to say that, you know, let's say that you say, okay, I need a new switch, or I want a new switch, and management goes, sure. Or is it more like you look at the network first and goes, okay, what is it that I need? Not just the switch. You know what I'm saying? You can look and you say, I need new workstations. And then you're the one that presents that business case to the business person.
So there's a couple things here. There are situations you're going to find yourself in where you say, hey, these workstations are old. We should get new ones. That's you saying that. There are other situations where management may give you the business reason. They may come to you and say, hey, we're going to be hiring 50 new employees. Get ready. Let us know what you need. Right there, you can justify the purchase of a new switch, because right, you're going to say, well, okay, we have a couple of switches, but we don't have enough ports for these 50 new people. I need to go buy a new switch. So let me go and research that and figure out what we need for that. And what are all the other technical requirements? Because now management is asking you to do a lot of things. You need a new switch, maybe two. You might need new workstations. You might need new software licenses. There's a lot of things you may need, because now you're going to get 50 new employees. So there's a lot of things that kind of go into this process. Some of it's going to be based on what you want and need, and some of it is going to be based on what the business is going to be doing, what management wants to do. They want to hire 50 new employees. Well, guess what? You're going to have more IT equipment to be able to do that. So there's going to be mixing and matching here as you look at this list of things. So that's how you would look at the switch process for that. Now let's look at the technical requirements. What kind of switch are you going to get? What brand are you going to get? Is it going to be layer 2, layer 3? How many ports do you need on that particular switch? Do you want 24 or 48? Where in the building is it going to go? So one example I'll give you here is a situation I was in where management came to me and they said, we want to hire new employees. We're going to be expanding. And so the admin staff was going to move to a different part of the building, and then we're going to get their own office. So I said, okay, where's this office? And they said, well, it's down 2 floors. So I said, okay, that's interesting. How many people are going to move down there? Well, it's only going to be a handful. So instantly I say, okay, we don't need a fancy switch. Maybe we get 12 port, 24 port. I think I went with a 24 port just to be safe. And then I said, okay, how far away is that? So I met with some people that were going to run our cables for us. We talked it over, figured out that it's too far to run Cat 6. So now I'm thinking, okay, we have to go with fiber because that's my only option. It's too far to do Cat 6. So what brand of switch am I going to get? Why am I going to get it? What are the technical requirements for running fiber between my existing switches and the new one I get in that other office? So those are some things that you need to think about. And I ended up getting the same brand of switches that we already had, which happened to be HP. And then I had to figure out what equipment I needed for the fiber piece, communicate that to the people that were going to run our cables. And then I was able to pick out the right equipment for that particular situation.
So this project management plan for you is more of a work in process, because initially you're like, yes, okay, I can get a switch to accommodate the move and what have you. But then once that the distance became an issue, then all of a sudden the cabling became an issue and you had to make a different decision or modify the plan. So when you're saying it's not comprehensive, you're just saying, you know, we're just going to do like what would you call it, a synopsis of it in the beginning. And then what we'll do is we will add the details as, you know, more of the needs of the plan, you know, or the needs of the business kind of come into the picture. And then you kind of tighten it up and then just make it a little more specific.
Correct. So these are just some things that I think you should be thinking about anytime you have an IT project. These should pop into your head.
But the scary part for me, I mean, you know this because you probably knew what the distance was for a Cat 6. You know, I know that I need to know that when I study for my Net Plus. You know, now I know why I need to know that. But for a newbie like me, if I start an IT job, I wouldn't think anything of it and I would have bought the switch. And all of a sudden, when I realize that there's no way the cable's going to reach, what am I going to do? I'm going to be sitting in there going, oops, I bought the wrong switch. This is not going to run fiber. What am I going to do with this?
And that's why we think about these things.
So for me, when I do the checklist, as vague as I needed to be, because I don't know the business needs at the time, I would have to say hardware, software, cabling, you know, just putting things in there that could either make me lose my job if I don't make the right decision because I don't know enough, or keep me employed because I have a fail-safe thing that tells me minimum I need to check this, even though it may not be an issue, but what if it is? So what would be the bare minimum that you would do on this kind of a thing?
So these are the things, the six things that I have listed here. These are the things that you think about as you're going through your project or as you're thinking about, okay, management just came to me. They're asking for this new technology or this new ability to do whatever new thing they need to have. So these are the things that should pop into your head.
Right. I understand the 6 points, but bear with me because I'm still a baby duck. So within those 6 points, would you have a checklist of saying, you know, technical requirements, check cabling distance, or, you know, find out if your switch requires fiber or Cat 6 or whatever, you know, what kind of a checklist? You would do a checklist for technical requirements, one for business requirements, one for implementation, you know, something basic. Or how would you deal with that?
So those are things that your project is going to help you with. As we go through this, we can talk about these different things. And we can see, okay, what do we need for this? How are we going to do it? Now, different technologies are going to require different things. Your switch is going to require one set of technical things. Your deployment process is going to be different than if you were to, say, install software on your workstations. So it's not like there's one size fits all. But there are things that you can think about. Oh, this is new technology we're going to implement into the network. I need to have certain technical things taken care of. Let me go find out what those are.
I guess I'm not really going for one size fits all. And maybe I didn't explain myself. But when you have me do my checklist for a specific service, it's really cut and dry. Because first of all, I need to know, do I need this service in my network? What does this service do? Try to understand it, try to see the things that it does. How does that affect my network? How can I implement it? It is cut and dry. So those are basics that I have to have. But when it comes to putting a plan like this together, and like I said, it, you know, being a project management with six different things to keep in mind, I guess for me it's kind of scary because there are things I don't know that I may not ask the right question on that as a noob. And, you know, if I'm trying to make my little name in IT to be able to secure my job and be in there, I guess I would want something that would trigger me to ask the right question. So, I mean, it's kind of scary. It's one of the things, I guess, that you deal in IT that experience will deal with it. I don't know. I'm scared.
No, and that's where experience comes into play. And that's why I think having a lab, a home lab, is huge, because you're actually going to implement these kinds of technologies. You're going to implement servers. You're going to do workstations. You're going to do some network stuff with switching.
But I wouldn't find out the distance problem in my network here because nothing is really far away. So how would I sit in there and apply this particular thing? How would I learn? Even by accident, some of the things that we learn by accident by doing on the labs are, you know, they're very valuable because those are things that you don't think on when you're doing a project or when you're implementing something. But like I said, when you were talking about the distance problem, that is not something you're going to learn in your lab because this is not an enterprise environment. And we can pretend sometimes that we can make an enterprise environment, but the distance part of it doesn't play a part in it. So for me, I think that's just, I don't know.
Some stuff you just can't plan for. There's just no way you can plan for that.
No, and I understand. You can't really know everything, and I get it.
So it's something that you just have to think about. And I think our lab is going to help us with that. And that's also where I think the certs come into play. The certs force you to learn stuff that you wouldn't normally think about. And then you might be able to use those things on the job. So that's something that you also want to take into consideration. It's not perfect, and this is not meant to be perfect. There's a lot of things that no plan is going to cover everything.
No, and you know, I think it just answered my own question. Because you always told me, I know a lot of people are anti-cert or what have you, but in a way, the certs fill those gaps. Because in my Net Plus, it does talk about the distance of the cable, you know, how far, you know, does a certain cable reach to. So I guess in that respect, when you look at it, for me, the value of the cert is on those things that if I know that, maybe that's the thing that triggers the question for me. You know, if I'm sitting in there and somebody's going, okay, you know, it's going to have to be two floors down. And, you know, I would go, okay, well, that's how far is that? And then at that time, it's like, well, if I knew that a Cat 6 don't go that far, then I would have to say, okay, now I need to consider a different option. So
exactly. So let's take a look at stuff that we've actually looked at here. We're going to talk about your DHCP and your DNS. So let's go through this process here. And this is just a quick overview. We're not looking at all of the options we have here or all the details. It's just something to kind of summarize what we've done with DHCP and DNS to see how this would apply. So is there a business case for DHCP and DNS?
Yes.
So what would be the business case?
What would be the business case? Well, the workstations need IP addresses, and you can't go, if you have 200 of them, you can't manually go and put an IP address, you know, on each one of them. For DNS, people would need to get information from the internet, and they need to make sure that DNS is working, because they're not going to know the IP address of google.com or whatever research they're trying to do. And for the web server, right? You know, and all those different things. So
here's a question for you. Is management going to know anything about DHCP and DNS?
No, because all they know is that, hey, I come here, I sit down, I log on my computer, and it works.
So this is an example then of technologies that are going to be there. There is a business requirement for that because certain things won't work without them. But management's not going to request it, right?
Yeah, but that is why you're the IT manager. You need to know that.
Exactly. So this is a case where you are going to have to justify why we have these things. Management's not going to say, oh, I need DNS, oh, I need DHCP. So this is a case of understanding your technology, understanding what makes up the network and how the network functions.
Well,
so
and that is something to know, back up, because when you were working for your other job and you had to do something for a new office, remember, we did the network diagram, and then we determined what kind of services were needed for that kind of thing. Then we did the subnetting for everything, decided if the wireless was going to be tied to the network or its own entity, you know, what have you. So that was in your plan, right?
Correct. But these are not things that somebody is going to ask for. You have to say these are needed in order for things to function properly.
But why would you need to tell... Well, okay, I was going to say, why would you need to tell the business part of it that you need DHCP? They don't need to know that. You know what it takes for it to work.
Exactly, but you have to have that down. So when they come to you, they're not going to give you all of the things you need. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, well, we need to open up a new office. They need to have this.
Right.
Go. So you're the one that has to determine that. It's the same thing with the cabling of my switch. They're not going to tell me, oh, by the way, it's too far. You're going to have to use fiber.
No, I understand that.
You're it. You're IT. You need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the scary part for people who are starting out in IT who may not know these things. Like you're saying, well, how am I going to know that that's too far? How are you going to know that you need these other things to make that office work properly?
Well, I guess the way to justify it would be, you know, you're going to need a DHCP server and a DNS server, and you need to let them know that. And you need to let them know why you need that.
Yeah, and you may not need to let them know that you need a DHCP server and a DNS server. What you can tell them, though, is you're going to say, okay, if you want that to function and you, the office is going to have ABC options in there, then you need to have a server.
Right.
And I need to have the funding for that.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. But if they're saying, well, why do we need the server? Then at that time you can say, in order for this to work, this is why. No, I get that you're not going to go in there and say, you know, I need a server because I need to put, you know, configure it as a DHCP server for this to be working. No, I understand that.
Okay, so now let's get to the technical requirements. What are some technical things you have to have for DHCP and DNS? Any kind of technical thing. Well, you have to have a server, right?
Well, yeah.
So that's a technical requirement.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What about your IP addresses for DHCP?
Right. You need to have your IP addresses. Well, you need to have your subnets. You know, you need to make sure that you test it, you know.
What about for DNS? What about your host names?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have those figured out. So when you go and punch in your host name stuff in there and for DNS, you need to know what those are going to be and what IP addresses are going to be assigned to.
Right.
So, for example, workstations may be a different situation. You may have them automatically being set up with DHCP host names and all of that kind of thing, especially if you're in a Windows domain environment. But you, when you get to your servers, you're going to have to be able to name them. When you get to your network equipment, you want to name them because you may not remember the IP address. So you may say, okay, this is switch one. So I may say, okay, switch one, office, blah, blah, blah.
Well, wouldn't you have to name everything in a way to where you would know where it was?
Exactly. You want some sort of naming scheme.
And then you can identify where your workstations are, where your servers are, and what has things like that.
Exactly. So you're going to have those things sort of figured out when you go and set up DNS and DHCP.
That's why I'm telling you, documentation is crucial, because if you have one person that sets it initially, workstation 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, when there were only 5 employees, and now you have 10 and 20, and you don't know where 1, 2, 3, and 5 are, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, so let's look at the business requirements. Now, in the case of DHCP, there may not really be any, it's kind of hard in these two situations to talk about business requirements. But let's say, for example, you're in a situation where they come to you and they say, okay, we are going to be adding 100 new employees. Now you're in a situation where you have a server, it does DHCP, but now maybe you need to have other subnets. You need to have other host names in there for other reasons, whatever they might be. So now you're in a situation where you have a DHCP server, but now there's stuff on other subnets. How is that going to work? What kind of technology do you need for that? So one thing that you haven't seen yet, and we haven't actually played with it yet, which we should be, and we may be able to do that with your lab of Raspberry Pis and all your services, is the DHCP relay, where my workstation is on a separate subnet from the DHCP server. Well, now what, how am I going to talk to that, right? My request is going to go out for a DHCP assigned address or looking for a DHCP server. It's not going to go anywhere because there's no DHCP server on my network. So now when I put in that DHCP relay, that will pick up the request and forward that on to the correct DHCP server, and then I'm going to get an address eventually. So those are some things that you have to think about. Now, as we play with this kind of stuff on our lab, we will learn these things, but you're not going to know them until you play around with this kind of stuff. But that's why we have these kinds of checklists. How do the business requirements affect some of my services and the location of those services?
Right. I guess for me right now, since I'm working on the checklist for the services, I hadn't even thought about any of that, even though we did the Cisco lifecycle. So I'm thinking that once we get done with the services and we decide to do the data center at that point, we can do project management.
Yeah, now let's talk about the implementation plan. So in this case, we're setting up a whole new network. So your implementation plan is pretty straightforward. We just implement them, right? So we're pretending that there's maybe a new office or a new data center. You have your stack of Raspberry Pis, you go to deploy your services. Now you're testing before you deploy. So you kind of have an idea of how these things are supposed to be implemented. And you have your checklist to help you implement them without too much in the way of issues.
So would you consider testing part of the implementation process? Because you're going to test it before you implement it and also afterwards to make sure to verify that they're working, correct?
Yes. But you want to make sure you can do some testing ahead of time. In certain situations, you really can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you're in a situation where that particular service is not going to function in your lab environment. There's no way for you to do that. You have to put it on the production server.
Correct.
So you want a process of testing, even if it's on the production server. Maybe you try to implement it over a weekend, and if something goes wrong, you can back out while nobody's there.
Yeah.
So those are some things you have to take into consideration. Now, when we talk about management, how do you manage DHCP and DNS? And that's something that, since we haven't really deployed that yet, we're not really using that yet, we really can't answer that question. Now, DNS, let's say, for example, you're in a Windows domain environment. You're using Linux, but in a Windows domain environment, some of these things kind of get handled behind the scenes with Active Directory and the way in which it all gets deployed. So some of that is a little easier on the Windows domain side than it is for Linux. You can do something similar on the Linux side. You just have to configure it to do that. And that's where we get into things like dynamic DNS updates, where a host will ask for a DHCP assigned address, and the host already has a host name, and that host name will end up in DNS. There's a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that we have to look into to see how's that done. How do we do that on Linux?
Well, you need to manage it too, because if you don't have DNS, you know, you have all sorts of troubles. You can't get your email. You know, there's all sorts of different things that DNS affects in the network. So you really need to make sure that you have some kind of checklist for maintenance or some kind of awareness of what it takes to maintain it. And if you're not the one that can do it or don't have the experience to do it, then like you were mentioning before, then you get somebody to do it for you. You pay somebody to do it for you.
Exactly. And now we talk about security. Mm-hmm. So are there any things we can do with DHCP and DNS that relate to security? How can we make them more secure?
Well, yeah, you can. But I mean, you know, it really depends, again, like you were saying, your business case, your business needs. What type of business is it? You know, what type of security are you going to need? You know, I'm not saying that there is you should have loose security, but in some aspects, in some businesses, you're going to have tighter security.
Correct. And I guess this is kind of a difficult question to answer because we haven't really looked at the security aspects of DHCP mm-hmm. or DNS. Now, one of the things that you haven't seen yet, or we haven't really talked about yet, is that there's DNS that's inside the network.
Right.
And then there's DNS that's outside, that's on the internet. Those are two different things.
Well, I know that one of the security features would be that you identify your host by MAC address. So I'm thinking that would be something that would add to security. But I don't really know because I've never done that before.
Right. And you're talking about DHCP, where you can do IP addresses assigned by MAC address. So that's one thing you can do on the DHCP side that might make things a little bit more secure. Now, on DNS, there are some things you can do in DNS that are going to make DNS more secure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking about DHCP. I apologize.
Well, there's different things that we have to look at in terms of both DHCP mm-hmm. and DNS. And we haven't gotten that far. So that's kind of a difficult question to answer.
Well, for DNS, would it be the whitelist and the things that you would say, okay, if somebody goes into a specific website, don't let it in? Or?
Well, yes. And that's not something I was thinking about, but you're moving in the right direction. So that's, you know, like if somebody requests this particular host name or website, don't allow them to go there. That's more of a firewall filtering feature. Not really a DNS thing, but it kind of sort of fits in with that. But that's kind of a different topic. So,
well, we need to redo DNS so I can understand it better because it was a long time ago since we did it. And we didn't have a clear, I didn't have as clear as I have, like, let's say DHCP with a new checklist and how we're approaching things. So perhaps we need to redo DNS.
Yeah, so let's talk about our Section 9 website, because this is something that we can quickly apply all of these things to.
Okay.
So the first thing here is we had a business case for the website, right? We wanted to be able to share some things with people, and I've had this for years. And part of it was for me to learn how to manage a website, learn how to manage a server in the cloud, and that's kind of why I started that. And now we have our podcast. So the website's really a big part of the podcast, where our feed comes from. It's how things end up in iTunes and Stitcher. So that's our business case. Technical requirements, we have to run Linux on there. We're using WordPress at the moment to manage the website part of it. Business requirements, we want to use that to kind of share what we do here on our lab with other people. And then we have our implementation plan. I didn't really have a good implementation plan because it was something that I was kind of using as a learning experience and kind of just, you know, dumping things on there as I learned them. And we'll get into that in a minute here because we're going to be changing some things here. The management plan, I don't really have a management process for that, partly because I am not a programmer. I'm not a web developer. So a lot of the things that I've been doing, there is a process to it. There is a plan, but it's not a very good one because there's some behind the scenes stuff that I should know that I don't. And so it's making that whole management process very difficult, especially when you have to do things like updates, make changes to your themes and things like that. That's where I kind of get fuzzy on the whole, how do I do this kind of thing? And then for security, this is where things sort of fall apart. WordPress has had security issues forever, and they've just been getting worse. So in terms of security, it's kind of full of holes. So one of the things that I'm thinking about doing is finding something that's easier to manage and more secure. So one thing I'm looking at right now is using Squarespace, which is an online service that you can use to host your website.
Yeah, no, I heard good things about it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty good. I'm looking at that as a possible option. So when you look at this kind of situation here, you have a situation where it's hard to manage, it's not secure, and we need something different because those two things don't go well together. If you're not managing it, you're not going to be secure. So these are things that you have to think about when you're working with these different services or doing something in a business environment. So any questions about this whole process? What do you think of this list?
You know, I'm kind of down on myself about having forgotten our Cisco process that we did because while I was doing it, and granted, I know you're making me do little bite-sized pieces for me to learn things, you know, a little bit better. And I was really jazzed and excited about it because I was, you know, taking the service, learning about it, doing my checklist, learning to implement it. But again, I don't want to be that IT person that looks at the network in a box. I should have been looking at the service and taking it maybe a little step further in the respect of, okay, there is this part, this portion of it, just like it was on the Cisco lifecycle. You know, there is a business case. There is the technical requirements and the business requirements and the implementation and management plan and security plan. And I think that maybe if at the end of every service I can say, okay, what would be a business case I can make for justifying this service? What are the technical requirements and then the business requirements? And you know, how am I going to implement this into the network? And then managing it. We did talk about how to manage the services, and we were supposed to do a checklist on that as well. And then, you know, you're the security person, so you would have to sit in there. Because when you were asking me about securing DNS and DHCP, I was blank. I was like, what? You know?
Well.
So, no, I mean, and I think that these are things that, again, from my point of view, me trying to get into IT, they're going to come up in the workplace. And I need to make sure that I have an answer or at least a plan to be able to get an answer and keep my job. I don't want to be one of those IT people that I learn one thing, I sit in my laurels, and then when people try to tell me to do something else, I have plenty of excuses not to move on. Not because I don't want to, but because I don't know enough. So, you know, I think this is good. I think this is kind of changing, or it's going to be changing for me the way I think of my checklists.
Right. And that's what I wanted to try to get here is that these are things that you don't necessarily, I think we should have a checklist for this. But I also think that we should use that as a way of saying, okay, we're creating a checklist for DHCP. How does this fit? We're creating a checklist for installing or setting up DNS. How does this fit? We're doing our website. How does this fit in with the website? Does the website, since it's already there and we haven't really evaluated that service, how does it match up to what we have on our checklist? And right now it doesn't fit. It doesn't, you know, we can't manage it properly.
No,
the security is terrible. So we may have to rethink that. We may have to find a better way to provide our website to people and do our podcast.
But see, here's the thing. I have you to point me in the right direction when it comes into these things. But think about it. People out there are learning IT and going to school, they're not going to be told to do this. You know, they're not going to know.
No.
How do they, I mean, you know, how are they going to learn?
So this is something that you're going to have to learn from other people. You're going to have to learn on the job. And a lot of IT departments don't have anybody who understands these things. And so that's why you have
networks. How scary is it when your part is in a box and you don't know because you can't see the big picture?
Well, it just comes from experience, and it comes from understanding how the technology works. And if you work for a larger organization, you might see some of this because they're the ones who are going to say, we need to manage this. It's too big not to do that.
Right.
You know, some places have no documentation. They have no understanding of how things work together, and they're not managing anything. They're just deploying stuff. So this is something that's going to help us moving forward. And it's something that you're going to learn as you work on your Raspberry Pi project where you're installing these different services. And we're going to go through the process of saying, okay, how does this match up to our checklist, right? What is the business case? How's the security? What are the technical requirements? These are things we want to understand so we can do this.
I think this need to be, these six items need to be answered at the end of the checklist, at the end of when we do the service. And, you know, we've done our checklist for the service, then perhaps we need to sit in there and then just, you know, to learn is to sit in there and say, okay, what is the business case for this? What are the technical requirements? And be able to answer those questions. And if I can't answer those questions, there's going to be two things. I either didn't understand the service properly. I didn't do my homework. There's something that is fuzzy for me because this is important. I think this is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I'm just really kind of bummed right now because, you know, just when I think, oh my God, I'm getting better. I'm learning something. Not that I think I know it all, but darn it, I sit in there and I'm thinking, I missed one of the biggest things. And we, you know, months ago, we did the Cisco Lifecycle. This should have been something that I should have considered. And granted that back then, you know, with my own level of awareness, I did the best that I could with what I knew. And maybe I didn't understand the impact of the Cisco Lifecycle like I do right now. So, you know, I'm a little bummed that I forgot.
Well, that's why we practice. And that's why we have our checklists. Yeah. So little by little, we're going to get there and it's going to be fine because we're going to have a lab that helps us do that. So I think we're going to be okay.
I'm just lucky that you know more than me and then you're actually teaching me this because I feel for people out there that may not have a you in their life or somebody that mentors them or takes the time to say, hey, you know, look at this.
Yeah, and this is something that's big in security. A lot of people in security struggle with these things, and certain certifications or certain organizations will focus on, is this something that the business really needs? If there's no business case, get rid of it. Don't even bother.
It's not just security. It's in IT as well.
Well, yeah. And then you're going to have all of your technical requirements and stuff like that. But then you also have to think while you're doing the project or while you're thinking about implementing this new service or this new technology, how are you going to keep that secure? How are you going to manage that?
Yeah.
Without management, you don't have security because you're not checking to see what's going on with that particular technology.
Yeah, and you don't have a baseline to really understand what it
no,
is.
No, you don't. So I think this is going to be good as we move forward with our Raspberry Pi project. We're going to try to incorporate this, and it should be interesting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us. And then if you want to check out our show notes, you can go to section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.